Good morning and welcome in to The Blitz, live here on Fan Run Radio, live 1340 AM, 105.7 FM, here with you for the next couple of hours, getting you to your lunch break on this Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, May 30th. Is this the last day of June? Tomorrow, or today the last day of May? Tomorrow the last day of May? May coming and going. Got a big week for you. NCAA tournament starts this week. Regionals, Tennessee heading to Clemson. NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals this week. A big game 7 last night. But first, want to introduce you to a new face in the building. Well, I guess this is an audio medium, so a new voice in the building. My friend Matthew Gill. Matthew, good morning.
Yeah, morning, Charlie. I appreciate you having me, man.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Yesterday, Memorial Day. It sucks that my first day is, the start of summer. Nothing big to talk about or anything. No big games or anything like that. It's the first day of summer radio season, so I guess we'll just rank some stuff and, talk about the succession finale. Nothing big happening in the sports world. But, no, I'm just kidding. It was an awesome game 7 last night for your boys, the Miami Heat. We're going to get into all of that, I'm sure. Can't wait to talk about it. But yeah, man, I just appreciate you letting me. I guess I'm going to guest host for a little bit as long as you'll have me, and glad to do it.
Yeah, so Bristol guy, right?
Yeah.
Bristol guy.
Yeah, Bristol guy. Went to UT, obviously. This is funny. So, like, me and Charlie did a little bit of radio together before. The last time we saw each other, I guess, like, we thought we were just going to have one extra week of spring break and for this thing called COVID. And then now it's 2023.
Yeah.
we're just now getting back together.
We were doing a gambling podcast. Doing radio.
Yeah, one day a week. And look at you now, man. You got a whole good setup now. You're doing great. So I was honored that you would ask me to come and help fill in with you. But yeah, Bristol. Let's see, after UT, obviously COVID hit, things got super weird with all that, as everybody remembers. Went to Memphis, did grad school there, and then came back to, my hometown of Bristol, which is where I'm at now. Just a short little commute down the road, just a hop, skip, and a jump to come join you today. Like I said, happy to be here, fired up, dude. Can't wait to get into your Heat and everything else, Vols baseball, everything you got for me.
I was going to say, yeah, last time I had you around, the Nationals were winning a World Series, so.
Yeah, things have changed.
Maybe you're good luck, though. You come around just in time for Game 7 for the Heat to get into the NBA Finals.
That is true, and I remember, you bring up the gambling podcast, you had one of the great calls of all time when you had that Kansas State-Oklahoma game. I can't remember I don't even know if you remember
Kansas
that.
Kansas State money line, baby.
Yes, Kansas State money line, you're all over it. I can't even remember who. Maybe that was the last Kyler Murray Oklahoma team. Maybe Jalen Hurts was playing at that point.
I had Kansas State to win the Big 12 this year.
Oh, did you?
So I can't really predict much, as you'll come to find out, or as our listeners already know. Not too good at that, unless it's Kansas State related.
Kansas State, your money.
I'm just in tune on what's going on with the Wildcats.
What a fun basketball team they had too this year.
Yeah, I think Keontae Johnson also stayed in the draft this weekend, so they're going to be resetting. Actually, I think I saw that Olivier Kamwa was
in talks with
visiting Kansas State this weekend.
That honestly would not be a terrible fit for him. Obviously, like, I want him to come back, and like, I don't want him to leave Tennessee. Like, he was a solid player for him the last 2 years. But Kansas State, man, like, that Marquise Noel, dude, he's just a player. And you put him and Kamwa on a pick and roll, that's devastating offense for a college basketball team. That'd be a great fit for him.
So Memorial Day weekend, what all did you get into this weekend? Anything good?
Well, my neck of the woods, we had just terrible weather, Charlie. It
really?
Rained. Oh, downpour. Saturday and Sunday, terrible. Wanted to play golf, never got around to it. But it was my brother's birthday. Shout out to my brother, Ben. We have 12 years of difference between us.
Shout out. So, that's a lot.
Dude, a lot. A lot. So he just turned 13.
That's crazy.
I know, dude. And I'm 25. Like, think about that, the difference between us. And as I mentioned, I'm back in Bristol now, living in my mom's basement. So now it's me and him just chilling, dude. Me and this 13-year-old. He just got out of school, so We got a lot of golf on tap.
So there's a lot of excitement around the Gill household.
Oh,
right,
big
now.
Time, dude. And we're going to have a big summer full of golf. Can't wait. So, yeah, Saturday we had his birthday party, and we had, like, a professional photographer come. So I was rooting for it to rain as hard as possible, and it did, and it still didn't get me out of family pictures. So that was pretty much the highlight of Saturday. Sunday, ran again, went to my favorite bar, grabbed some wings. Next time you're in Bristol, we'll check it out. And then, as you know, or maybe not, we have the Bristol Casino now, which is basically like that.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be in Bristol a lot more now. So
it's, and that
I'll
is,
be hitting you up for
that
sure.
That is my standing Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening plans. Like, that's a good, like, way to, like, roll into the week. But sometimes it also ends up being my Friday, Saturday, and Sunday plans, and that was the
case.
I'll
tell you
what,
man. If they ever put a casino in the town I live in, I'm going to have to live in a new town.
It's trouble, dude. It's trouble. You have to watch yourself.
If tonight they announce, on top of G10 in the new Vol Village, we're throwing in a Hard Rock, I'm going to have to leave the radio station and leave Knoxville.
Well, you know, with that new bridge coming, this whole entertainment thing they're going to get on. Like, the casino is the next step. I hope you realize that. Like, they want to be this, like, I guess they more want to be, like, Nashville, but it's not that far from, like, the setup of Vegas is what, you know, when I read it, that's what I was thinking. I was like, you can just walk everywhere. The casino's next. People are going to be throwing down bets on a kiosk as they walk into Neyland. Like, that's the future of Knoxville. And you're going to be in trouble. It's going to be a problem for you.
The kiosks I'm okay with, but if you give me, like, if I can go play poker on a, like, if you're telling me on a Wednesday night in June where there's no sports on, I can just be, I guess I'll just roll on down to the casino and play
five
hours of Pie Gal. Like, that's,
I mean, it rules. Yeah, you were the first person that actually put me on to Pie Gal, because the first time I went to Vegas, we were, I think, doing the show. I may have had to leave a couple days. And you were like, dude, you got to play Pie Gal. You basically can play for hours and get free drinks. And that was how you sold it to me. And since then, all of my friends have said the same thing. They're like, you got to play Pie Gal. I'm just a blackjack guy. I keep it simple.
Push and get my drinks.
But exactly. That was exactly how you sold it to me the first time I went to Vegas. But yeah, dude, like, I love it. It's crazy because it's in just our old mall. The Bristol Mall, which was maybe...
I did not know that. I still haven't made it up there yet.
So, it was maybe 20 stores, and I mean, it was nothing like that crazy. It was like a Zoomies and like an FYE and maybe like two other things at its absolute prime that were nice spots or whatever. And now that is where the temporary location for the casino is. They're building the, like, Hard Rock, like, on the same property, but the temporary location right now is just our old mall, which is hilarious. But it's probably, like, 25 tables, something like that. They got a good sports book set up. But, yeah, that was a long ad for the Bristol Casino. but, yeah, that's what I've been up to. That was my Memorial Day weekend. What about you? I saw on your Snapchat story, dude, I live on a golf course, and I think you actually still play more golf from me, just from your stories. It seems like you're always playing golf, which I applaud. I love that for you.
I played golf on Saturday, but that was the first time in 8 days, so
that's tough. But
yeah, a whole 8 days without golf.
How are you hitting them these days?
Pretty good. I played one of the best rounds of my life on Saturday. I've talked extensively on this show about the one friend that I have that's a better than scratch golfer, that every time I play with him, I go over 100.
Yeah,
like
it's tough.
It's the biggest mental block. I don't know what it is, but I just get rattled every time I play with him. And finally, like, I had a great round. I played from the tips at, like, a pretty difficult course.
Yeah.
Like, we're, you know, par 3, 200, mm-hmm. 215, 220. And went and shot, like, a little 85, which, you know, not a bad round at all.
Yeah, no, my best round ever is an 86, and I've been on this journey of what I call the strive for 85, trying to shoot 85 literally since the start of last summer and still haven't hit it. So that's a great round.
Yeah, one of my better rounds, and we were playing Stableford too, so
I'm not familiar.
Where's that at? Everyone gets a point total they have to reach based on their handicap.
Oh, it's a gambling game.
It's a gambling game. So yeah. It's based off your handicap. So, like, my handicap is, like, a 16.6. So, mm-hmm. I had to get to 24 points. My buddy that's a scratch golfer, he had to get to, like, 36.
Got it.
So,
okay.
You know, it's essentially equates to par per hole.
Love it.
Because if you get a bogey, you get 1 point. A par is 2 points. A birdie is 4 points.
Love it.
So everyone's trying to get to their quota. If only one person reaches their quota, they win. If more than one person reaches their quota, it's whoever went past their quota by more, not who has the most points. So I was able to get it done.
Love that. Love that for you. That's a simple game, which the game of golf needs more of in the gambling space. Some of the games that I read about are way too complicated. Me and my buddies keep it simple. We're just skins games and stuff like that. But you'll like this. You're one of the most plugged in Tennessee fans, so you may recognize these names. At least one of them you'll recognize. But so probably 3 weeks ago, I'm playing at where I live, Bristol Country Club. And I'm on the 13th hole, and I'm, like, backed up. There's two foursomes in front of me. And this group of four guys come up behind me, and, like, they're just throwing darts right all around the pin. And they come up on me. They're like, oh, they got you waiting. And I'm like, oh, I recognize these guys. And it's Jet Tickle and Chase Roswell, who played golf at Tennessee and are sick.
Yeah,
and
I'd say, yeah, they're probably throwing it at the green then.
Well, Tickle, like, you know the Tickle name out there on the engineering building. And so so it's his kid, or, you know, that was his grandfather or whatever. But Jet and Chase are amazing golfers. The third kid was one of their roommates, also a Tennessee golfer. And then the fourth kid was a kid from my hometown as well who played at a small college, like, right in Bristol or whatever. So they're all, like, really sick golfers. And, yeah, played not terrible. I made a couple long putts that they were like, oh, okay. And there was one hole where I birdied, and I think only one other dude birdied or whatever. It's a good feeling, though, when you're playing with sick golfers and you can still hold it together. So I feel your pain on that, like, playing around people who are just, like, playing a different game than you.
I don't know what happened, but me and all my friends started golfing when we were about 15, mm-hmm. and they all just got really, really good.
Yeah.
And I just did not. Good weekend, though. Yeah, I was back in Franklin this weekend, and I went and saw that new Burt Kreischer movie, The Machine,
Friday night. How was it?
Good. Very good, actually.
Really?
Felt like one of the first times leaving a theater in a long time that I was like, oh, that was a true comedy.
It
felt like the kind of comedies that they were pumping out monthly back in the 2000s. It felt like one of those. I mean, it had its cheesy comedy elements, comedic elements, and it wasn't, you know, a perfect story or anything like that, but it was just really funny. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Kept laughing to myself the whole time, too, though. Besides the jokes, it was funny that in today's climate, they had a movie take place largely in Russia with like several very likable Russian characters.
Well, that was why it got pushed back so far. Was like it was done before the war started.
They made it pre-war, and they were like, man, this is tough. But you know, we made this whole movie.
I think they held it like 6 months or something.
Definitely wasn't anti-Russia. I'll say that. I wouldn't say pro-Russia, but it definitely wasn't anti-Russia, well, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, these are some cool places. Where is this again? Oh, wait, Russia. Oops.
Yeah.
It's like, I like this girl. Oh, wait, Russia.
Russian, yeah. Are you a Kreischer fan? Like, do you like
his stuff? I'm a big fan of Bert.
I go back and forth with Bert. Sometimes he's like a lot for me, and that's what has prevented me from what percentage of the movie is he shirtless? That's what I would like to know, because that would gauge for me how 7 out of 10.
7% probably.
Oh, 7%. Which is that's low, though.
I mean, that's still like a good amount of time in a movie to be shirtless, but
it's a lot of time.
I'd say probably 4 scenes.
Oh, that's not bad at all. When you consider that his stand-up is 100, like, that's a pretty good ratio. You know what I mean? But I mean, everybody's seen the Kool-Aid clip, and that was kind of like what put him on my radar from the podcast or whatever, where he's drinking all that Kool-Aid. And I love their podcast and stuff like that. But yeah, sometimes just the shirtless stand-up is a lot for me. But you are a good movie critic, though. I don't think you get enough credit for that.
I'm a big movie guy.
You are.
Oh, hey, are you on Letterboxd?
I'm not. No.
I'm going to get you on Letterboxd during the break.
Rating it is. App? Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to get you on. I get everyone. As soon as people tell me that they're movie people, I remember you're a movie guy because I remember going to watch Parasite
at your place. Yeah, so that's another. Yeah. So I was thinking about that all the way.
I'm going to get you on Letterboxd.
Okay, I'm in on that. But yeah, you don't get enough credit for it. As much as you are locked in on, like, really, like, you know, out there college basketball teams, and you're as locked in as anybody in college baseball. You're locked in just as much as in movies. I think people need to recognize that.
Big movie guy. I also watched Fargo this weekend. Didn't love it. Everyone, I saw all my friends on this app. They all liked it. I wasn't a huge fan.
That's cool, though. So you just look at the app, and you're like, oh, I wonder what my friends thought about this movie.
You can see what they've been watching and stuff, but...
Love that.
I have a 600 movie watch list, and whenever I want to watch a movie, I just put it on shuffle, and whatever the first movie is, no questions 600? Asked, I just watch it.
Damn. That's a lot. That's a lot of movies, for sure, to get through. You brought up the Parasite thing. I was thinking about that on the way here, man. What a great movie that was. I have not been on my movie game. I still haven't seen Air yet. Have you seen Air?
No, I'm still. It's on the list. I was going to watch it on a plane. I didn't. But, watched that movie this weekend. Played some golf this weekend. Grilled out. Made some chicken thighs, some brisket. Came back here. Watched The Heat last night. Overall, a very good weekend. A very good weekend. I was... very nervous yesterday, but couldn't be happier this morning with Miami Heat winning game 7.
Were you nervous at all when you read that Miami had scheduled a flight, even though every team does
that? That was actually when I saw Miami had only booked a flight to Denver, not back to Miami.
Yeah.
I felt better. The only thing that really gave me any kind of confidence was knowing that the Heat were confident, knowing that Jimmy Butler was confident.
But I think that that happens every year.
Like, probably.
I think that that was a little bit overblown.
I'm cool with it, though.
Yeah. At least from the fact that I think people thought that Boston was going to see that as a slight. And it's like, no, dude, that's just good travel plans.
you
do the same thing.
It'd be really tough to be scrambling at 11:30 last night. Like, how do we get to Denver? Where do we go?
Yeah, exactly. Or just like... Just think about it. It's like if you had, I don't know. I don't even know what the equivalent would be for us just like making a trip. If you had like a job interview and if you were job hunting and like maybe you would have an opportunity to have an interview in Denver tomorrow, like you would book the flight anyway. You wouldn't wait until the confirmation that the interview is good to go. You know what I mean?
Like I just kept telling myself all day though, yesterday, just Jimmy Butler is not going to let himself end on the wrong side of history.
Mm.
Like, there's no way that Jimmy Butler was going to let his name be, you know, synonymous with getting reverse swept for the first time in NBA history.
The reverse sweep.
I kept telling myself that yesterday. The Heat were just too tough. Jimmy Butler is too tough to let it happen to him. And really, shout out Miami. They just gave us a week of something to watch and talk about.
Yeah, exactly, because it would have been a really long week.
Would have been over a week.
Yeah.
In between playoff games if the Heat would have just finished off the sweeping game 4. So pretty unselfish of us, I would say, to provide entertainment for the rest of the country for that long.
Yeah, exactly.
Shout out us, really.
Yeah, credit to you guys. So I want to dive into almost everything about this series because I know that you are a Heat guy. Let's start here. When the
we'll get into it on the other side for sure.
Okay,
definitely. We'll go ahead. Go ahead, catch a break here. Back here on the Blitz, lots to get into today. Again, we have a game 7 last night, Miami Heat avoid finding themselves on the wrong side of history as they take game 7 in Boston, decisive fashion, punch their ticket to the NBA Finals. Also, have Tennessee's location for their regionals heading to Clemson. We have SEC meetings taking place in Destin this week for the first time. It's not just 14 flags anymore, it's 16. Texas, Oklahoma, they're there. They get to take part in SEC meetings this weekend, this week. So a lot to get into today, but we'll start with Game 7. Again, Miami last night getting the win over Boston, and for Boston, the same thing that plagued them in Games 1 through 3, it came back to bite them last night. in the first three games of the series, Miami, well, first they got the good version of Jimmy Butler. Last night we got the pretty good version of Jimmy Butler. Not the most efficient night in the world for him, but he was excellent in the biggest moments of the game. He was excellent in the second half and was a good all-around teammate, too, passer and rebounder. So you got the good Jimmy Butler. You were able to turn the Celtics over. And for the Heat, their role players hit threes while the Celtics' role players didn't. You know, that really felt like the difference last night. The first three games, you also added in Bam Adebayo being excellent. He struggled last night. But, you know, for Miami, for three games, they turned Boston over and were able to keep them from shooting all that great of a percentage from three. And the role players stepped up. And for the next three games, that disappeared pretty much entirely. So the Celtics, man, just an inconsistent team. I think a team that relied too much on their talent and not enough on their identity. And, you know, they head into an offseason of questions while Miami becomes the first eight seed to make an NBA title since the 1999 New York Knicks.
That's a great stat. You say the inconsistency, the 3-point shooting really sticks out to me for the Celtics. That was kind of the story of their whole season. Like, they got out to this incredible start to the regular season, and if you looked at the numbers, they were just hitting all of their threes, and they were taking so much more of them from the season prior, you know, under Udoka. And I think Mazzulla really wanted to emphasize that this season, and it kind of became their undoing at the end. They could not make shots whatsoever. And as you said, Miami's role guys, Caleb Martin in particular, just couldn't miss from outside. And Jimmy, you know, the pretty good Jimmy, as you said, like, all of his big moments, though, were like to stop a Boston run to try to get back in it. Like, you know, Boston gets it to 12, they get it to 9, Jimmy 3. And that's one of the biggest testaments to Jimmy, is he's not that great of a 3-point shooter every regular season, and then every postseason he can turn it on and make the big ones that matter. And he wasn't awesome offensively, but he was timely. Like, every time Boston got within striking distance, you know, they went to Jimmy, and a lot of times Caleb Martin too, to kind of silence those runs. And I would say, like Bam didn't have his great you know, his best offensive game, and he, and really the whole series hasn't been that great as an offensive player, but I thought he was great defensively last night, and a lot of times during this series, making things tough at the rim, and just an all-around great team effort from the Heat. But in my mind, man, just start to finish, this series just comes down to Spoelstra's just, what a coach, man.
And he's so much better than Joe Mazzulla.
It's not even close, man. He pantsed Mazzulla this entire series.
He almost felt bad for Mazzulla at times.
Yeah.
Because he was just getting, I mean, completely outclassed as a coach. And I mean, Spoelstra has the ability to do that to teams and do that to guys, but the Celtics, again, it felt like they didn't. I mean, if you were to answer, like, what is the Celtics' identity, I couldn't give you a firm answer. It seems like all season long they just say, okay, well, we'll shoot a bunch of threes, and if that doesn't work, hopefully Tatum takes over, or hopefully Jaylen Brown takes over.
Yeah.
So when Jaylen Brown disappears like he was doing throughout the playoffs, and, you know, Tatum rolls an ankle, that all of a sudden it's hit these threes or you're done.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I think other teams that still shoot a high volume of threes, they have other things that they can fall back on. They have a plan B and a plan C and you know, a plan D. And it felt like the Celtics, they just had a plan A, and it worked enough because of how talented they are. They didn't really have to develop a plan B or a plan C or counters to what they do or just alternatives, really, to rim and three. And so Jason Tatum last night rolls an ankle. They're not making threes, and all of a sudden, you know, you're scoring less than 90 points in a game seven at home, and you look completely lost.
Yeah, you're in trouble, and that goes back to the coaching thing, man. Like, those adjustments, that's how you get to plan B and C. You know, coming into the game, that Miami is going to show you the zone defensively, which, you know, they kind of extended out in a really good way. The top two guys were making things difficult on ball handlers, trying to get into the half-court offense, I guess. But, like, once the Celtics made, you know, that first pass, if they had, you know, even a semi-open look, they were going to jack it up. And you talk about, like, these prolific three-point shooting teams having these backup plans. Like, think about all the times just in this playoffs, like, the Warriors come to mind, like, the team that kind of revolutionized how many threes we take. Like, Steph improved his finishing around the rim so much this season. I feel like he's a better finisher than ever. And that is kind of a good plan B for them. You go back to those Houston Rocket teams where they're jacking up a ton of threes with Harden. Well, their plan B was Harden go get a foul, and he could do it every single time. And, like, Boston just never really had that. And I think the injuries are a real factor. Like, you mentioned Tatum's ankle pretty much to start the game last night. Brogdon was a huge part of this team, though, and, like, obviously was compromised, almost unplayable towards the end of the series. And, you know, I think we all need to remember that Jaylen Brown did hurt his hand. Like, he did have whatever happened, like some kind of cut or whatever. And it's not really an excuse for the dribbling, because he's never learned how to dribble. Like, the Heat exposed that last season on him. And so there were injury factors. I'll still say today that I thought Boston was the better team, but, like, the Heat just play, you know, they earned the series, though. Like, they deserve to win the series, but I still thought Boston was the more talented team, and that may be even more of a testament to the Heat.
Yeah, I think that's three straight series the Heat have beat the more talented team.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about New York.
Maybe the Knicks.
But definitely Milwaukee and Boston.
Right.
Definitely.
You know, the Knicks, with Randall and Jalen Brunson, RJ Barrett, is that better than Jimmy and Bam and the Heat's collection of role players? Actually, I would probably still give the nod to the Heat.
But, I would, yeah.
You know, they've won two out of three series against more talented and in some instances extremely more talented teams.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, big time. And it's a testament. I mean, like, that's what great coaches do. That's why Spo is.
And LeBron wanted him fired. LeBron LeBron almost ended this career before it even happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he is
one of the great coaches.
One of the best of all time.
Yeah, definitely. I think, would you say he's number one in the NBA? I think most people think that
right
now.
Yeah. It's either him or Pop.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, you know, obviously people didn't watch a ton of Spurs games this year. They stunk, but, like, Pop had them competing, at least.
Didn't he have Jacob Poeltl averaging, like, 20 a game?
Yeah, they had to trade him to maintain the tank, dude. Yeah, I mean, obviously Pop, like, has the chops. Steve Kerr also, like, comes to mind. But Spo's right up there, man. And for whatever reason, him and Jimmy both turn it on so much more in the playoffs. Like, Spoelstra has the ability to make those adjustments, not just series to series, but game to game, half to half. Like, there was a lot of time, like, you know, those first couple games, maybe game one and three in particular, I remember the Celtics were up at half, and then the Heat had a massive third quarter that the Celtics couldn't overcome. And that's a direct line from coaching. Like, you look at how good the Warriors are in the third quarter that everybody talks about. That directly comes from having a good coach making halftime adjustments.
Yeah, I mean, the Heat had to overcome deficits in games one and two.
Multiple
on the
times,
road.
Yeah.
10-point, you know, double-digit deficits.
Yeah.
That's maybe been overlooked. Jimmy in Miami really was the perfect marriage. And since he's come to the Heat, you know, the first NBA Finals appearance since the LeBron era, that was back in the bubble. First 8 seed to reach the NBA Finals since 99, the first play-in team to make the Conference Finals, first play-in team to make the NBA Finals, led Miami to the third Conference Finals in four seasons, headed to the second NBA Finals in four seasons. And, I mean, he's, again, a lot of times in the playoffs, the less talented team.
Mm. But
it's just so impressive. I'll ask you this, though. I was kind of back and forth on this last night, watching after the game and the post game and the Bob Cousy presentation and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
The vote was dead even. I think it was 5-4.
5-4, yeah.
For Jimmy Butler. Would you have given it to Caleb Martin instead?
I wouldn't have. He was awesome. Like, he deserves a ton of credit. But Jimmy Butler is what makes that team go.
Sorry for those listening. It being the Eastern Conference Finals MVP.
Which I believe is the Larry Bird Trophy. Yeah. Which is tough to get.
Take a step back real quick. Ernie last night was not holding back on the Celtics fans. That was hilarious. He got up there and ironically enough, two trophies named after Celtics legends. We're here on your home court. You know, this. I know it's certainly painful for you Celtics fans. Thanks for sticking around. I was laughing my
so brutal
my butt off.
So brutal, yeah, to win the Larry Bird trophy in
and
Boston.
Bob Cousy,
yeah, and the Bob Cousy as well. one thing I would assume you would agree on being a Heat fan, but I think it's indisputable now. As you said, overcoming at least two teams where they were less talented. Jimmy Butler has been the best playoff player since the bubble. The bubble really started, I feel like. And he has just been a monster. It's crazy how much better he is. And I remember there was like a tweet he had where he was like, it's April 1st, this is when I start playing basketball, and people were dogging him for that. It's like, dude, what about the regular season? Which obviously like does not matter anymore. But as soon as it comes playoff time, man, like Jimmy Butler takes it to another level. And like, I truly believe Caleb Martin does not play as well as he did if he doesn't have a guy like Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, that I think that's an invaluable part of Jimmy Butler's game that people don't give enough credit to, is how he really just instills confidence in all those role players. You know, Miami has seven guys that are undrafted playing minutes for them in the playoffs, and you know, part of the contribution you get from those guys is directly related to the culture, and that's part of the culture that Jimmy Butler helps create. And I think that he really makes those guys feel comfortable in the playoffs. He allows those guys to play at a high level. He allows those guys to be themselves. And, yeah, I don't think those guys – and I don't think Caleb Martin have the performance they do without Jimmy. I would have maybe voted for Martin. He was unarguably Miami's most consistent player for seven games.
Yeah, definitely, especially offensively.
And he showed up at times when Jimmy didn't.
Yeah.
He was definitely more efficient, too. I thought he was far more efficient. He had four threes in Game 7, and they were all in huge spots. You talked about Jimmy Butler last night with his timely shots ending Celtics' runs. Mm. Well, there was a couple of times, too, where Caleb Martin hit a big three to stretch the lead back out to 10 or back out to 9 or even, you know, I think one time to get it to, like, 8. Butler was dominant. I don't know. Again, he wasn't super efficient. Sometimes I don't love rewarding high volume, low efficiency. But at the same time, Butler completely set the tone in games 1 and 2. I mean, he won this series by going into Boston, going into the Garden, and in games 1 and 2 and stealing wins. So,
yeah.
You know, I get the argument for both. I guess part of me just wanted to see Caleb Martin get it. Looking ahead to the NBA Finals, I've seen a lot of people already talking like they haven't learned from the first three rounds. Well, you know, Jokic has had almost 2 weeks of rest, and this should just be an easy one for the Nuggets. And,
yeah.
You know, Nuggets in 5. Early thoughts on this series?
Nuggets in 5.
Yeah.
As much as
have you learned nothing?
Yes, exactly. And I knew coming here today that was going to be your reaction, and rightfully so. Like, if I was a Heat fan, I would feel the same way. Like, why? We've won a game one on the road all three of these series. We've beaten teams who are more talented. We've proven, you know, we've been here before. The Nuggets have never been to the NBA Finals. This Heat team, you know, at least parts of it, have been to a Finals not that long ago, and they should be getting more credit. But coming off a Game 7 battle like that, and I think Boston ran into a little bit of this problem in the conference finals, is just coming off of an emotional battle that a Game 7 is, and then going to the next series, the 8.5-point line that I saw for Denver is not high enough. Like, it would have had to get to 20.5 before I said, all right, I'm taking the Heat.
Wow.
That's, I mean, it's after all the credit I just gave to him.
Well, I'm excited to talk again on Friday then. We'll see.
Yeah, I can't wait. But it's so hard from going from that Game 7 to now you have to play. Is it Thursday or Friday?
It's Thursday.
Thursday they're going to start in Denver, who has an incredible home record during the regular season, undefeated at home.
We haven't won in the postseason. Heat haven't won in Denver since 2016.
That's a good stat to know as well. And as
good.
You said, the rest deficit is massive at this point.
How do we know that this rest isn't going to be bad for the Nuggets? How do we know this hasn't just stalled their momentum? And
Rest versus Russ.
How do we know Jokic wasn't just slugging beers and not working out, though, you know?
We don't know that. He could have been horse racing this entire time in Serbia. That's absolutely possible. Could have been, I don't know, bare-knuckle boxing with his brothers, also possible. All stories that I would believe if I read them. But I think this team just is so... It's all business with this Nuggets team, it feels like. Like, they did not get caught up in the glamour of Devin Booker and KD. They didn't say, oh, it's the Lakers. Like, we're going to take a game off because the whistles aren't going our way in game four. Like, they just come in. They're buzzsaw, dude. They're an incredible basketball team that operates from this fulcrum of an incredible basketball player who I think is the best player in basketball right now. Jokic is an unstoppable offensive force, and I think he's... The thing is, Bam and Jimmy guarding Jokic and Jamal Murray is going to be really fun to watch. I think it's a good defensive matchup to make them work.
I'm so excited just for the beef these two teams have.
Yeah.
I don't think people are remembering how much beef these two teams have.
That's a good
scrum
point, yeah.
Last time with Jokic and his brothers even kind of getting into it some. The big collision with James Johnson. James Johnson missed like a year of basketball after that collision.
I was thinking it was one of the Morris twins.
Or no, it was. You're right. I don't know why I said James Johnson.
But I think James Johnson was a different incident. I think that happened.
That also happened.
But I think he was playing for the Nets at the time. Could be wrong about that.
No, you're right. He'd have beef. I mean, it ended with Jimmy Butler yelling across the court at Nikola Jokic to meet him out back.
Yeah, yeah. And not nice words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these teams are
don't like each other.
Going to have, there's already the intensity of the NBA Finals, but there's going to be some chippiness.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know the Jokic brothers are going to show up in South Beach. I can't wait to see them getting heckled by, you know, a bunch of very tan, bald-headed dudes and possibly getting in a scrum in the stands right behind the Denver Nuggets bench. But I think it's going to be – I think it's a really interesting series, like, I think it's Nuggets in five, but like I think the individual games will be good. Like I think it'll be competitive. Not game one. The Heat have no chance in game one. But
can't wait to bet Heat money line.
But Spoelstra is such a good coach that I think he'll make the necessary adjustments to keep them in it in game two. And it'll be still Nuggets 2-0 coming back to South Beach, but they'll feel better about it after game two. But game one's a blowout. That's my reading.
Tyler Hero might be coming back. He's targeting a game three return.
Yes, I had that.
We'll see.
I had that as something I wanted to ask you. Like, do you think that's a good thing, or do you think they've played better without him?
I'm kind of 50-50 on what you do with Tyler Hero when he does come back. I think games one and games two will kind of help you decide what his role will be, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll see a little bit more there, but yeah, man. This should be a good finals. All the people that are complaining,
the ratings police, like, get out of here.
That drives me crazy. Oh, there's no good stories. Like, oh, you know, we're out of storylines. Oh, you know, every time we don't have the historic franchises in a championship in any sport, they just tell us, oh, there's no good storylines. Oh, where are the storylines? How about you just do your job and find them? They're there.
Yeah.
They're great.
People,
and you have a ton of great storylines in this NBA Finals.
Yeah, people think this Nuggets team is boring and there's like not a lot to them, and you know, Jokic isn't this flashy player and all these things, and you know, the Heat team is kind of decimated and thin and full of role players. But like, I think it's a really interesting matchup for sure. I am kind of worried about the Heat running out of made shots. Like, it feels like they did not miss in the Celtics series, and I wonder if that carries over and continues, or if they're gonna have to get in the paint, get Jokic in foul trouble, like,
that's
push the issue and transition more. Like, I wonder if they'll be able to continue to make outside shots the way they
do. That's what's got the Heat here more than anything else, is just an impressive basically month of shot making
after being one of the worst shot making teams.
See Jimmy last night, Bam tried to hand him the trophy, he said, Oh, wait, I want to hold the next one. We'll catch a break here, though. On the other side, we'll be joined by Logan Quinton. We'll dive into the Clemson Regional and Tennessee's draw. Stay with us here on The Blitz. All right, back here on the Blitz, 10:46 on this Tuesday morning. Transitioning out of our Game 7 talk, we're going to head over to the Big Orange Philly phone lines, where we will be joined by none other than Logan Quinton, your friend, our friend, friend of the station, and local college baseball expert. Logan, how are you doing this morning? Logan, we got you. No, Logan. Alex, did you press the button through on that side? Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, I guess we will wait real quick. You can just go ahead and turn the phone line back off real quick. Tennessee, though, heading to the Clemson Regional, where they'll face Charlotte on Friday night, 6 o'clock. In there with Clemson, Lipscomb, Tennessee, Charlotte. A lot of storylines there. Charlotte's best player, a guy that hit 30 bombs this year, you know, tops in D1, a former Hardin Valley player, Tennessee's Friday night starter.
How about that?
A Charlotte transfer.
How about that? A lot of crossover.
Yeah, a lot of crossover. A Charlotte team that really is in the NCAA tournament just because they ran through their conference tournament and went and won a conference championship. We got Logan now. Logan, are you there? Still no Logan. Okay, we'll try to get Logan in an hour or two instead, if we can. But it's a regional with some very good pitching. A very athletic regional, as I'm sure Logan will put it. If we are able to get him on, as he likes to call Clemson, Kentucky on steroids, essentially.
Love that.
Yeah, it's not a great matchup for Tennessee by any means. They can throw a lot of different pitchers at you. They can, you know, hit for contact, keep games low scoring. It's almost like Georgia football, like ground and pound, defensive, control the possession type baseball at times. But
just good old fashioned.
That's a regional, man, that is going to have a ton of energy to it.
Go ahead.
It's similar to, I think, what Tennessee was like when they first got to host a regional. The year that, obviously, you had the Drew Gilbert walk-off grand slam.
Incredible.
Everyone was just hungry for a good Tennessee baseball team that year. Finally getting that good baseball team and getting to host a regional. I mean, that was one of the hottest tickets in the country. It's a similar vibe at Clemson right now. They are rolling. You know, they've been desperate to have good baseball at Clemson for a minute now. And this team is hot. This team's been playing great baseball. They got all the way up to a 4 seed nationally. They just won the ACC. Me and Logan are going to Clemson this weekend. We got a hotel room. I think it's going to be really hard to find tickets.
You're going to love it, though. If you get there, they have an incredible baseball stadium. My best friend from high school went to Clemson.
You know how to get us tickets?
You
got a guy?
Maybe. I might be able to put in a call for you, see what the Kellys got lined up. I'm sure they'll be there. But it's an incredible stadium. It's awesome. It's a really good home crowd as well. Like, it's not on par with Lindsey Nelson, but as you said, it's like a fan base that is hungry for good baseball. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, the Tennessee fans are going to travel well, so they will be well represented. I'm not super locked into the Charlottes of the world in college baseball. I know that you are, but just my gut reaction from seeing the draw for Tennessee and their path to Omaha, my gut feeling is they either lose in the regional or they win the super regional, and there's no in-between.
Yeah, that's the reverse side of things. This regional feeds into the Auburn regional, and Clemson-Auburn, they match up with each other here. That Auburn regional, Southern Miss, Sanford, Auburn, and Penn, that looks like a regional that could very well have an upset. You know, that Sanford team and that Southern Miss team, very pesky. So if you get an upset in that regional, you know, you could potentially have a situation where Tennessee's then hosting a super.
Yeah.
If they could get out of the regional. But then B, I just think whoever you match up with out of that regional or out of that, you know, out of that regional in a super regional, again, if you get out of the Clemson regional, obviously that's what's ahead of you. But if you can get out of that Clemson regional and get to a super, I think whoever you match up with, you can absolutely beat in a three-game series.
Yeah. That's what I think. Like, I think it's either they lose in the regional or they win the super regional, and I don't see, like, some kind of middle gray area.
No. And, again, you know, this Clemson regional, everyone pitches well. Everyone, I mean, if you look at the whip, they're all top 100.
Love that.
I think it's Clemson that actually has the lowest whip out of all of them.
Wow.
You know, walks, hits, per innings pitched. Basically, yeah, the amount of runners you're allowing on base per inning. The biggest advantage that Tennessee has, though, is the pitching depth. And that was going to be the case no matter what regional they ended up in. You know, again, unfortunately, I think there was some other good pitching in this regional, so some other teams have some decent pitching depth. But nobody has what Tennessee has in the sense that, you know, you can go Andrew Lindsey, Chase Dolander, and Drew Beam Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you need a fourth starter, if you have to play a fourth game, well, you also got Chase Burns and Camden Sewell and Seth Halverson.
Not
and
bad.
Xander Sechrist that could all start a game. Mm. Not to mention, you know, the bullpen is just incredibly deep. Again, all those guys that I just mentioned that could be a fourth starter also come out of the pen along with, you know, Hollis Fanning and Kirby O'Connell and I mean, you know, Aaron Combs, and just the collection of arms that Tennessee has should strike fear in, you know, any potential regional opponent. Pretty unfair, I would say, really, to Clemson.
Yeah.
If I were, you know, Tennessee fans, they're a little bit pissed to be in Clemson's regional. They felt
definitely
like they probably should have been seated higher and put in, you know, a team that was a national seed in the teens type regional. Maybe 14 seed in Indiana State. Maybe they
right.
should have been in the Terre Haute regional. So to get bumped
right.
all the way down to where you're playing at a four seed regional, Tennessee fans probably feel like you got pinched a little bit there. But man, if you're Clemson, you got to be livid. Just won the ACC, got up all the way up to a number four national seed, and you know you get the best two seed out of all the two seeds.
Yeah, congratulations.
In your regional. You get a team that's arguably more talented on paper than yourself. I'd be livid if I were Clemson.
Yeah, yeah. Congratulations. Here's your ACC trophy, and you have to play Tennessee in your regional. It's super tough. My favorite baseball, you know, you mentioned the Nationals earlier. My favorite baseball team, the Rays, I think back to 2020 when they went to the World Series in the COVID year. The thing that their manager kept saying about this guy, about that team, was that they just had this stable full of horses, this stable full of arms, incredible depth coming out of the bullpen, and it can be like a real weapon for you, especially when it comes to games that are postseason games and elimination games. Like, being able to rely on the guys coming out of the pen and your starters is such a weapon when the offense, and especially as you say, like setting up the entire regional, if pitching is going to be at a premium and you know, there's going to be not a ton of offense because the pitching is so good, then you feel comfortable saying, like, we have all of this depth and we can win, you know, single digit run games. We're not going to have to play, you know, 12-10 games, and we feel comfortable with where we are with some guys who have proven it, you know, not just this season but in the past as well, that they're going to show up in these big moments and be reliable, not only starting games but coming out of the pen.
Weather looks to be pretty decent this weekend.
Love it.
High of 83 on Friday, high of 85 on Saturday, and a high of 77 on Sunday, so it actually drops a little bit for that final day. No rain in the forecast right now. Hit a little quick knock on wood there, but hopefully weather not an issue. Ball, I think, should be flying pretty decent this weekend. Again, good pitching in this regional.
I would check the dimensions. I think Clemson is a pretty big park. I could be wrong. I might be misremembering, but in my memory, it looks huge. So that could play a factor in the home run ball as well. A lot of balls staying in the park. Could be wrong about that. But
no, I mean, I think we'll
at least compared to
Logan
Lindsey
Quinton, but
yeah, at least compared to Lindsey Nelson.
I want to say it is a little bit bigger, or at least it plays bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Coming off that lake.
Not the most ideal draw in the world, though, for Tennessee.
No.
Great environment. Should be a lot of fun. Again, you're going to have a packed stadium. Oh, I just got a text. Logan says it's 310 in left field, 320 in right. So, I mean, there's room down that left field line for sure.
Yeah. Not as much as I would have. It was what it looks like in my head, but I'll trust his metrics on that. I'll trust the data on that one. Trust science, Charlie.
Pretty fun draws out there in general, though, in some of these regionals, man. There are a lot of fun regionals out there in general. We'll talk more about the entirety of the postseason for college baseball, all the regionals out there, and we'll talk more about Tennessee and this Clemson regional too throughout the week. In hour two, we'll have Logan Quinton join us for the top of the hour. Also talk a little bit of SEC meetings and play good, bad, and the ugly. But hour one's done. Hour two's on deck. Stay with us here on the Blitz.